Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Janna Valama Girivara Dari Jasoda Nanana Mraja Janaranyana Jamuna Chiramana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayang Gopinjana Valamba Girivara Dhari Jasodana Nandana Mraja Janaranjana Jasoda Nandana Mraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tiramana Chari Jamuna Tiramana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari 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 Jai Om Shrimpaya Paramahamsa Parivraja Gacharya Shatara Shatashri Shri Maharaj's Divine Grace Irsi Bhakti Vrananta Swami Prabhupada Ki Raj Kranta Shrima Bhagavatam Ki Samvita Bhakti Brindi Ki Nitai Gopinandi All glories to the Summon Devotees All glories to Shri Shukra and Gauranga O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Shitoshna Vatavarshani Shutpipase Priya Priye Sukha dhuke iti dwan Najayat samadarshana Chatoshna vadavarshani Shutpipase priya priye Sukha dukha iti dvandvani So I suppose I connect Ajayat Ajayat samadarshana Shitoshna Vatavarishani. Kripase priyapiye Tsupa duke di ti dundun Nijayat sumadarshana Chutoshna vatavarshani Chupipase priyapiye Suka duke riti tam. Ajayat sundarshan. Mothers. Chitoshna vatvarshan. Shut pipase priya priye. Suka duke riti tam. Shita, cold. Ushna, heat. Vata, wind. Varshani, and rainy seasons. Kshut, hunger. Pipase, and thirst. Priya, pleasant. Apriye, and unpleasant. Sukha, happiness. Dukhe, and distress. Iti, thus. Dvandvani, dualities. Ajayat, he conquered. Samadarshanaha, equipoised. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation, through austerity, King Malayadvaja, in body and mind, gradually became equal to the dualities of cold and heat, happiness and distress, wind and rain, hunger and thirst, the pleasant and the unpleasant. In this way, he conquered all relativities. Purport, liberation means becoming free from the relativities of the world. Unless one is self-realized, he has to undergo the dual struggle of the relative world. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advises Arjuna to conquer all relativities through tolerance. Lord Krishna points out that it is the relativities like winter and summer that give us trouble in the material world. In the winter, we do not like taking a bath, but in the summer, we wish to take a bath twice, thrice, or more a day. Thus, Krishna advises us not to be disturbed by such relativities and dualities when they come and go. The common man has to undergo much austerity to become equipoised before dualities. One who becomes agitated by the relativities of life has accepted a relative position and must therefore undergo the austerities prescribed in the Shastras to transcend the material body and put an end to material existence. King Malayadvaja underwent severe austerities by leaving his home, going to Kulachala, taking his bath in the sacred rivers, and eating only vegetables like stems, roots, seeds, flowers, and leaves, avoiding any cooked food or grains. These are very, very austere practices. In this age, it is very difficult to leave home and go to the forest or the Himalayas to adopt the process of austerity, the processes of austerity. Indeed, it is almost impossible. If one is even advised to give up meat eating, drinking, gambling, and illicit sex, one will fail to do so. What then would a person do if he went to the Himalayas or Kulachala? Such acts of renunciation are not possible in this age. Therefore, Lord Krishna has advised us to accept the Bhakti Yoga process. Bhakti Yoga will automatically liberate a person from the dualities of life. In Bhakti Yoga, Krishna is the center and Krishna is always transcendental.
Thus, in order to transcend dualities, one must always engage in the service of the Lord, as confirmed by Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena, bhakti yogena sevate, saguna samatityaitan, brahma buyaya kalpate. Quote, one who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. End quote. Last paragraph. If one is factually engaged in the service of the Lord, bhakti yoga, he will automatically control his senses, his tongue, and so many other things. Once engaged in the bhakti yoga process with all sincerity, one will have no chance of falling down. Even if one falls down, there is no loss. One's devotional activities may be stunned or choked for the time being, but as soon as there is another chance, the practitioner begins from the point where he left off. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyananta Mirandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Vanchakaputurubhyas Chakripasan Virevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining here. He says liberation means becoming free from the relativities of the material world. relativities in the material world begins with the relative position of thinking oneself the body. The absolute conception of the self, opposite of relative is absolute. So the absolute conception of the self is as eternal servant of Krishna. Jivera sarupoi krishnera nityadas. That is the absolute conception of the self. And a relative conception means anything else. So then the relative conception begins with the idea that I'm this body. And then according to the type of gross body I have, then I am a pig body, a cat body, a dog body. This is all relative position. And as a result of identifying as a cat, dog, or as a human being, instead of as a servant, then one is concomitantly afflicted by various material desires. We all have practical experience of this. And then due to being afflicted by material desires, then we experience the relative world as happiness or distress. Happiness or distress is not real. It is like happiness and distress in a dream. When you're dreaming of some happy experience, let's say you meet the girl or the guy of your dreams in the dream, is that a success or failure? What do you say? Both. Well, see, illusion. Huh? It's neither. And if you're suffering the dream, are you? You know, Prabhupada gives an example. If you see a tiger eating your head in the dream, are you suffering that experience? In truth, you're not. Although by identification you are experiencing, but in truth you're not. In truth, you're sleeping in your floor or whatever. So because you're accepting the relative position of a dream body, then you're experiencing the dream world in a certain way. But if you were not to identify with that dream body, then the experience would be neither happiness nor distress. It is what it is. You would not be disturbed by it. So then, if we want to perform the devotional service, if we actually want to come to the platform of real devotional service, then it is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in many places, and also by Krishna, that it is essential for one to come to the liberated position. Liberation means, as the first sentence is described here, liberation means becoming free from life's relativities, beginning with the bodily conception of life. So long as one is not liberated, he does not actually engage in devotional service. Brahma-bhuta prasannatma na shochati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktam na bhate param. Krishna says, if you want to engage in my devotional service, mad bhaktam, my bhaktam means pure devotional service. Unless you qualify, devotional service always means pure devotional service. That's the only thing that will attract Krishna's attention. So he says, if you want to engage in my pure devotional service, mad bhaktam na bhate param, then what? You have to become Brahma-bhuta. You have to become self-realized or freed from life's relativities. Not shochati, not kankshati. And what is the indication of that freedom? First of all, there's prasannatma. There's joyfulness. Joyfulness is not a matter of external, you know, you see the devotee always smiling ear to ear, therefore he is prasannatma. Even a materialist looks like that also. So we don't say they are prasannatma. So prasannatma means the happiness that they're experiencing within themselves. That is described by Srila Prabhupada in that purport. He's always internally joyful. Like one time, some disciple, Mataji, came to Prabhupada and showed Prabhupada a picture of himself. And she said, "Prabhupada, why do you look so sad in this picture?" And Prabhupada said, "Let me see that picture." And then she showed it to him. And Prabhupada said, "That was one of my most ecstatic moments." So the joy is something within and not without. We're having external conception. Prasannatma is the freedom, inner joy of being freed from material desires. Therefore, na shochati, na kankshati. There is no lamentation, there is no hankering. Lamentation and hankering only take place when one is having a relative conception of the self. In other words, he thinks he is the body. So then he's having so many desires, and when those desires are not yet to be obtained, he's hankering for them. Therefore, his consciousness is always arrested by fear and anxiety. And after he gathers that thing which he's hankering for, he's arrested by fear and anxiety because he's always thinking about losing it. What will happen? What becomes lost? Everyone knows it will be lost in due course of time. And then when it's actually lost, there is lamentation. So in this way, Krishna describes that unless you're a Brahma Bhuta, then one will always be not feeling joy. Because just having the material desires is itself a miserable experience, isn't it? Just like suppose you are envious of someone. That envious itself burns up your happiness. Suppose you did really good. Suppose you did it. Suppose there were two devotees that led kirtan. You led the first half of the kirtan, and another devotee led the second half of the kirtan. So you felt that your kirtan was really good, you know, and all the devotees were dancing. It was ecstasy. And the other devotee was like, you know, he was all right, but my kirtan was really, where was that? So then a devotee comes up to both of you at the thing, and then he glorifies the other, "Your kirtan was so beautiful." And then he looks at, "Hare Krishna." He doesn't say anything to you. So then you become envious. So the happiness you were feeling that my kirtan was so nice, etc., becomes burned up by the envious feeling, isn't it? Yeah, so we experience this, that when there is material desires within, one cannot be happy. That is itself a platform of misery. So then then you're always hankering and lamenting. So Krishna's describe this situation, how you will engage in devotional service if this be the situation of your inner life. It is not at all possible. So long as a person is constantly afflicted by material dualities, then Krishna says he cannot engage my devotional service with determination. Nirdvanda moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridavrataha. Unless he is nirdvanda moha nirmukta, free from dualities. And again, the dualities, we're experiencing dualities due to accepting a relative position in the material world as his body. So he says, unless he is free from that, then bhajante mam dridavrataha. He cannot perform bhajan. Bhajante means bhajan, worship. With determination. His determination will be sidelined by his absorption in material dualities. We may have the experience that so long as we are thinking ourselves as body and therefore being very much impacted by material dualities, then it is impossible to fix the mind on Krishna. The whole process of Krishna consciousness, even sadhana, the essence of sadhana, what is the essence of sadhana? Practice. Close. That is close. That is correct answer also in a lot of ways. True. Fix the mind on Krishna. That is the essence of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, fix the mind on Krishna. And then the principle governing that is always remember Krishna, never forget him. Huh? So then, unless we fix the mind on Krishna, Prabhupada said this is the beginning of devotional service. This is the beginning of Sadhana Bhakti. He states that it's the duty of the spiritual master to help the disciple to do so. And then in the next verse he says, because Lord Chaitanya gave a very authorized program centered around chanting the holy name of Krishna, then when one is able to fix his mind on Hari Nam, that is the beginning of sadhana bhakti. But we will discover that so long as we are hovering on the bodily concept of life, then we are not able to fix the mind on Krishna, actually, because the dualities will suck up all the consciousness. Just like, same example, if you know, the devotee, he didn't glorify your kirtan, he just said Hare Krishna. The next morning when you're chanting japa, why Kirtan was so good? Why couldn't he understand? Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. All the devotees were dancing in my Kirtan. He wasn't dancing in the other Kirtan, you know. And then when you see that devotee walk in, I'm not going to even offer obeisances, you know. Like that, because the consciousness is completely stolen away by identifying oneself as a body and therefore being accosted by duality. So Krishna said, you must become nirdwanda moha nirmukta. You must become liberated to actually engage in devotional service. Because you can't even engage in sadhana bhakti without some amount of freedom from material dualities. So now Srila Prabhupada discusses here, on the platform of the sadhana, where one is actually identifying with the body, there is no question of freedom from a relative position. Because we're accustomed to thinking of ourselves as his body since time immemorial. And unless I'm free from the body concept, and therefore not identifying with how dualities are hitting me, how do I fix the mind on Krishna? So Prabhupada's quoting 2.14 Bhagavad Gita here. What is the principle that governs a devotee's life? A sadhaka means one who's practicing devotional service. So Krishna has spoke, Dehinosmi yata dehi komanam yovanam jara tata deyantara prapti dirashchatra namuhiti. That the principle of the spiritual principle is that we are not this body, we are spirit, soul, and soul is changing bodies. Those who have understood this truth, they are dhiras, they're very sober. This is an indication of persons who have real understanding of spiritual principles. They are sober. Many times you go to these various events, so-called spiritual events, and everyone's very frivolous. Hi, how are you? Like some girl in a leotard would walk up to you and want to embrace you and in spiritual ecstasy. Oh, Hare Krishna, brother. No, it's not going to work. But actually the real principle of a person who's understood spiritual life is sobriety. They become sober. So then Krishna, Arjuna, accepts this philosophy. Very nice Krishna, very good philosophy. Yeah, I'm not this body, but I'm accustomed to think of my relatives in this way. I'm accustomed to think in terms of the body concept. Therefore, when the mind is not satisfied, I'm very much disturbed. Krishna says, yes, it's true, actually. He agrees with him. Yeah, you're right, actually. Therefore, what is the principle for you? He said, you must learn how to tolerate, isn't it? Mantra sparshas to Kaunteya, Shritoshna, it's the same, Shritoshna sukadukada, agama panyino, anityas tamtitikshusobharata. The principle governing sadhaka's life is learning how to be tolerant, because we will be accosted by dualities. And this tolerance is not just everyone is tolerating. Just like if someone says shut up to you and walks away and you get really upset about it, you still have to tolerate it. There's nothing you can do about that. So it's not that this principle of Bhagavad Gita is not just learn how to tolerate. That is not a positive application of just tolerating. The positive application is continue to remain fixed in your dharma. As Srila Prabhupada discusses there, if you want to get to the self-realized position, there is a necessity of execution of dharma. In our case, it means bhakti, but dharma, because dharma will purify us of upadis. Sarva upadi vinir muktam. We need to become free from upadis, false designations. So dharma will purify us of upadis and we'll come to the self-realized state. So there's only one obstacle in our execution of dharma. What is that obstacle? Sense perception. What does sense perception refer to? Mantra sparsha su konteya shitoshan sukadukadaha. What does sense perception refer to? Happiness, distress, ego, dualities. It refers to the mind. It is a mind that is seeing happiness and distress, heat, cold, etc. Just like Prabhupada is giving an example here. When it's very cold outside, no one wants to take bath, right? Sometimes you want to just take a rag. Like some in India, in the wintertime, it gets very cool in India. Many times we think India is very, very hot, but in wintertime it gets quite cold and you have to take bath outside sometimes. So it's miserable, no doubt. Even sometimes you put the water on you, the steam comes out of the body. And when I first saw that, I was like, I'm going back to sleep. Tell me when the sun rises. Your steam comes out of the body, so it's very austere. So sometimes, okay, I have to take bath. So you take a rag, you know. You want to do it like that. But then, when it's hot outside, that same cold bath you're very happy to take 2, 3, 4 times in a day, probably the same. So it is all, it's a perception of the mind. So that means it is the mind that is the obstacle and the execution of our dharma, isn't it? We have the experience. Krishna says that you must elevate yourself with the help of the mind and not degrade yourself. The mind is the best friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. So many times we have this idea, I mean, it is also true in a lot of, in one sense, that, oh, I'll just neglect the mind, just ignore it. But actually, Krishna describes in Gita that you actually need the assistance of your mind for elevation and yoga. He describes the, what is that? The Aruruksha stage, Yoga Aruruksha stage. That means the beginning stage of yoga practice. And then the advanced stage of yoga practice is called Yoga Rudha. And to go from the beginning stage to the advanced stage, Krishna describes you need the help of your mind to do so. So the mind is the best friend and enemy as well. So it is the mind that is creating the obstacles in the form of arising in the psyche as material dualities. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, you have to learn how to tolerate that. Because first of all, the mind is unpredictable. Like a child. A child is very unpredictable. Will you base your activities on the desires of a child, a foolish child? No one will do that. Because a child is very unpredictable. He may do anything at any moment. Just like during kirtan, many times when the kirtan is very loud, the children don't say anything. They look very bored and uninterested. We see in the kirtan sometimes. Very quiet, peaceful, looking around. Very dirasta chanamuyati, very sober. And then as soon as the kata starts, namaste, namaste, they'll start singing. You get bewildered. When the kirtan was heavy, very quiet. But when the kata starts, it's probably because they don't want to hear the kata. So they're playing the Lord Nishingade, please protect me from the kata. I've seen at many home programs, especially home programs, the children, they begin singing during the kata. And during kirtan, they're very quiet. So the child is very unpredictable. So the mind is like a child, actually. It's a fact, isn't it? Mind is very much like a child. Only difference between us and children is that they have no ability to be deceptive. Now that we've become grown up, we are very good at being deceptive, duplicitous, isn't it? The more, especially in the type of civilization we live in, it very much encourages deceitfulness. But that is the only difference between a child and a grown man. The mind of a child and the mind of a grown man is the same. The only difference is that the grown man is better at deceitfulness. I remember one time I was in New Vrindavan. Radhanath Maharaj was giving kata on Narottam Das Thakur's pastimes. And Maharaj gives very long classes. So each class is going 3-4 hours long. So you know how many times Maharaj says, should I continue? And all the devotees say, Haribo, and Maharaj will continue. So one time the kata was going 3 hours long, and it got to like a very kind of crucial part. Then he said, should I continue? And one child, no! He stood up, no! Please do not continue. And we all started laughing. And Mara started laughing too. He said, he is saying what you all are thinking. But because we are more duplicitous, we say, Haribo. But all of our faces would be like, Jai Maharaj, go on. Not very happy. So the kid is, they have that power of being straightforward. Whereas adults are a little bit more. One congregation member, he brought his kid. And his kid is always, doesn't like me, you know. So one time he was trying to get his kid to say Hare Krishna to me. Come on, say Hare Krishna, say Hare Krishna. He was just looking away. And then I said, you don't like me very much, do you? And he turned around and said, very straightforward. I started laughing. His father said, don't say like that. I said, no, this is good. And he's very straightforward, very honest. But if we go to each other and say, you don't like me very much, no, Prabhu, why are you saying that? I like you very much. No. But then internally, something else is going on. So this is, anyway, mind is very much like the child. So a child is unpredictable. That same kid who said he didn't like me, one day he dressed very nicely. I said, hey, so-and-so, I'm not going to say the name because you all know him. I said, you look very cute today. Then he started blushing, and then ever since then, he comes up to me, offers obeisances, talks to me and everything. So this is the mind of a child, very unpredictable. So Krishna is saying how the mind will be, how you will be experiencing the mental vibration is very unpredictable. You cannot predict. The same thing that was a cause of happiness in one circumstance, the same exact thing will be a cause of misery in another circumstance. So are you going to put your faith in an unpredictable mind? Krishna is asking Arjuna, you have a duty to perform. Right now your mind is saying this is a very bad thing, so you're going to abandon your duty. You'll get the negative results of actually abandoning your duty, and the situation you're so much attached to, that will also be destroyed. That way you become a double loser. Isn't it? Just like Srila Prabhupada speaks about this in Ishopanishad, where they've rejected self-realization on the plea of the necessity of feeding a hungry belly. But as a result, their bellies are still hungry because exploitation is going major, and they've rejected the principles of self-realization. In that way, they're a double loser. So Krishna is saying, you're so attached to family members, not wanting to see them die, but in any way they will die, and you will also get the negative result of abandoning your dharma just because of a mental vibration. That way you'll become a double loser. So you have to learn how to tolerate that mental vibration, and the positive application is fix on your duty. And by fixing your duty, dharma, then gradual purification until you come into self-realized state or liberation. At the stage of liberation, there's actually a chance for bhakti, pure devotional service. Otherwise, it's not pure. It cannot be pure without that liberation. Does it make sense what I'm saying? I know I'm speaking a little fast. So then Srila Prabhupada discusses in the second purport that a point I've already explained, one who becomes agitated by the relativities of life has accepted a relative position. So we've just already described that. And must therefore undergo the austerities prescribed by the Shastras to transcend the material body and put an end to material existence. So for those who are identifying with their body, then for them, it is necessary to perform austerities. And not to prescribed austerities given in the scriptures in order to transcend the material body. So then there are various austerities described in the scriptures which are impossible for any Kali Yuga creature to do. Bathing up to the neck in cold water during the winter season. Anyone is ready? Just to take a little cold bath, you know, when it's, you know, 50 degrees outside is, you know, if the hot water valve goes off, you know, you turn the water on, it's cold, you'll stick your toe in first, okay. Stick your arm in first. And then if you get in, you'll face the shower head away from you a little bit and like kind of like prep yourself, you know. Okay, here we go. One, two. Ooh, okay, hold on. Oh, like that. So imagine being bathed up to the neck in the cold winter season. Anyone ready for that? Summer season, surrounding oneself by fire with the sun blazing in your head. These type of austerities they would do. Or Prabhupada is mentioning here, he went to the forest. Where are the forests, first of all? And even if there were forests, no one would want to go there and meditate. As I always joke about this, it would be too scary. Because we're used to a very protected environment. If you go to the forest, all types of creatures are living there, you know. Suppose you hear a cat, but it's not like, rawr, then you will not be able to, how you will meditate? Rawr. What's that? And then all of a sudden you hear, shh, shh, shh. Then you'll get up and run and then finish. Or you hear a serpent is going by, you know. Suppose, even if the serpent doesn't attack you, if a snake just comes right up to you and doesn't do anything, you'll be frightened like anything. So there's no question of meditating in the forest. And even if you do, even if somehow that I'm not afraid I will do that, you have to live on stems, roots, seeds, flowers, and leaves. No more paneer sabjis, no more lemon rice, no more burfis, you know. Stems, roots, seeds, flowers, and leaves. So who is prepared for such austerity? So Bhavas and Kali Yuga, this is an impossible thing to do. I was hearing a lecture yesterday, Srila Prabhupada was telling me, and Kali Yuga, austerity is chant, dance, and take prasadam. He said, but we are so fallen that we can't even do that, Prabhupada was explaining. We are so fallen. Why we cannot do that? Because of material dualities. Even when the situation is so nice, plenty of prasadam available 3 times a day if you want. What a convenience that you go out all day for some hard service and you come back and prasadam was there. Guaranteed, you don't have to cook it or anything. And what a convenience it is. But even though the situation is so nice, chance to serve the deities, do kirtan for the deities, everything is so nice because of being afflicted by material dualities, we cannot even do that. That is our fallen situation. We are so fallen that we cannot appreciate. Srila Prabhupada was describing. So this austerity is not possible. And this age of Kali, the austerity has to be accepted. It's the austerity of, Prabhupada says, Bhakti Yoga. What makes Bhakti Yoga austere, the principles of Bhakti Yoga are very simple. But what makes it austere is the principle of every day. That's what makes it austere, every day. It's like sometimes people come to Mangalarti once in a month. They said, that was easy, so much fun. I was like, yeah, try it every day and see how easy it is. If you have to wake up once a month early in the morning, then of course you will think it is easy, and then you get support of devotees, and it's nice, it's fun. When you do it every single day, especially after Ekadashi, especially after Nirjala Ekadashi, everyone like, oh. Everyone dragging in the bathroom. You know, it would take you, normally what would take you 20 minutes to get dressed would take you 40 to 45 minutes because the fast will be draining out your energy. And every single day, especially because bhakti is done in the association of other devotees, what makes bhakti austere is the association of other devotees. Especially neophyte devotees. There's probably no greater misery than being in a movement of a bunch of neophyte devotees. It is miserable. Why? Because I always joke that neophytes like to fight. And I always say also that, Neo, the word neo means new. So the neophytes are always looking for a new fight. That's why our movement is always so much fighting going on in the movement, isn't it? Everyone's wondering, why so much fighting? Because everyone's neophyte. That's a fact. Actually, in any religious institution, the majority of persons are neophytes. In any religious institution, there will be a few that are on the less that are on the Madhyama platform and very few on the topmost platform. So people, sometimes they leave the movement because they say the devotees aren't like this, like that. No, it's neophyte devotees, always fighting with each other. So many times we are misled by external bodies, which means we ourselves are identifying with our bodies, gross and subtle, and therefore we identify others with their gross and subtle bodies, and therefore they do very things that are very irritating. Because without the principle of Krishna, many of our natures probably would not at all match up. Only because the principle of Krishna is there can so many contradictory natures exist in one room, you know, somewhat happily, at least peacefully. Otherwise, without that principle, we would not be able to do so. So many times, if we're not liberated, as has been discussed here, then the association of devotees becomes also austere. And what is most austere about association of devotees is trying not to commit offenses. Because in the material world, we would have immediately blasted someone if they, you know, crossed us or something like that. But in association of devotees, you think to blast them, oh man, dang, he's a devotee. I have to like carefully choose my words, and I have to, and that way it is a very austere thing. Because we are gripped, in Kali Yuga, most of the jivas are gripped by offensive mentality. So it's very difficult to avoid offenses. This is the austerity of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga, Mamsha yo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. There's a nice verse that is there. Avyabhicharena bhakti yogena. What does it mean? Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport, what does it mean? What does it mean to be avyabhicharena bhakti? What does it mean to have that full determination and devotional service? Krishna describes there, it means that even though he's being accosted by the modes of material nature, because it's saguna samatita, this is how you transcend the modes of nature. So Prabhupada uses this language. Even though he's being accosted by the modes of material nature, there's a nice verse, guna pravaha etasmin. I was learning this verse yesterday. Ka shapa nanu ko nanugraha. What is that? Ka swarga naraka kova ka sukam dukam evava. Guna pravaha means this material world resembles the material world resembles the constant flow of waves in a constantly flowing river. Just like if you're in a river, you're constantly being hit by waves, isn't it? Constantly. So this is Tritiketu speaking. What is a curse? Kashapa, what is a curse? What is a favor? Kaswarga, what is Swarga Loka and what are hellish planets? What is happiness and what is distress? They're all just like waves. Someone cursed me. Someone favored me. Someone, what is that? Swargaloka. Swargaloka means a place that is predominated by goodness. And hell means a place that's predominated by ignorance. So sometimes you're in a place that's predominated by goodness, then you go out for preaching, place predominated by ignorance, right? More waves. Happiness, distress, heat, cold, victory, defeat, loss, gain, right? Constantly flowing. So these are all due to the modes. Guna pravaha means the waves are compared to the modes of nature. Samsara is a constantly flowing river of the modes of material nature. So you're swimming and you're constantly being hit by these waves, isn't it? You have experience, everyone's got experience. Constantly being accosted by the modes of material nature. And what is the tendency? The tendency is this, when this wave comes, to absorb my energy so much in that tendency that I forget to focus my attention on Krishna and I focus my situation on, I even start praying for these things. This is the foolishness. Sometimes people go to the deities, please help this situation, help that situation. Then the situation goes away and they think Krishna is very kind to me. I'm like, no, nonsense. It is all temporary anyway. It is not that so much Krishna is favoring you in one sense. It is that it is anyway a temporary situation. Unnecessarily, you are absorbing yourself in that. And then you absorb yourself in that wave, it disappears, and here comes the next wave to absorb ourselves in. We have this tendency, isn't it? So one devotee says something to us, and we get so bent out of shape, we spend all our time trying to fix that situation, and then in the process of doing that, another wave comes. Then we spend our time trying to adjust that situation, then another wave comes. This is called Preshapatmika Shakti of Maya. The Preshapatmika Shakti means the energy of Krishna, which is diverting the jiva from his highest auspiciousness. How does she do that? Keep sending the waves of the modes of nature. And because we have this tendency to just absorb ourselves in the temporary, our whole life becomes deviated from our actual pursuit. So mamcha yo avyabhicharena bhakti means, Prabhupada describes, it means that when one is accosted by the modes of nature, he does not invest consciousness into that. He rather invests consciousness into Krishna, to the goal of his life. Just like when you're swimming, so the waves are hitting you. Do you make a big deal out of that? Or do you try to go to the shore? Suppose you're swimming towards the shore. Because your goal is the shore, when the waves are hitting you, you're not even paying any attention to that. You're just going for the shore. You know what the goal of your swimming is, to reach the shore. So when the one wave, suppose a big wave hits you, you're like, oh man, that was a big wave. And no. By the time you're even thinking like that, here comes the next wave and the next wave. So when you're swimming, you just boom, boom, and you just keep going because you know you're trying to reach the shore. But if you didn't know you were trying to reach the shore, if you weren't actually trying to reach the shore, you might easily get absorbed in that, like a surfer. Prabhupada said, sufferer, surfer, the same thing. They said, what is it, on the morning walk? Prabhupada said, what is this? And the devotee says, surfing. Prabhupada says, sufferer, yes. something to that effect. And they didn't know Prabhupada, surfer. Prabhupada says, same thing. Same thing, sufferer. So he is not going towards the shore. So he is happily trying to enjoy the waves, right? He jumps off and jumps back into the... Yeah, so this is our situation. So, but for one who is intelligent, he is trying to reach the shore. So when the waves are hitting, he's not making... So what is the goal of our life? It is quite amazing that people have enough time to write many articles about each other on Dhanavats, criticizing various preachers and so on, and they have no time to actually chant Hare Krishna. Because, you know, to write an article takes a lot of energy. It's not like we're Vyasadeva, we can just... To write an article, you got to really think offensively, you know. Choose the right offensive word, the right example to offend, like that. You have to think deeply. All that mind force. Therefore, writing is a very powerful tool to go to Krishna. And if you don't use it for writing about Krishna, then that same tool you use to condemn yourself forever. So it's amazing how in our movement even, so people have so much time for all these things. Even Facebooking, so much Facebooking. They have no time for reading Shastra, but they have at least 1 or 2 hours they can spare for Facebook. All these things are going on, but they have no time for actual Krishna consciousness. That means they're investing in their consciousness. That means they're not aware that the goal of their life is Krishna, prema. That the goal of their life is to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. There is a difference between knowledge and cognition. Or to say it another way, when we say knowledge in the Krishna consciousness movement, we mean cognition. It, just like if you close your eyes in this room, you may know where everything is, but you're not aware of it. So if you try to move around with your eyes closed, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because you cannot see, you're not aware. As soon as you open your eyes, you become aware of everything, then it's easy to move around the room. So in the same way, it is not sufficient just to know what the goal of our life is, but we have to actually cognitively realize it, that this is actually the goal of my life. Then when one is fixed in his purpose, then it's very easy to transcend the bombardment of material dualities by bhakti yoga. But if he is not fixing the purpose in his liberated state of jivera swarupoya krishna nitya das, then his consciousness is stolen away by material dualities. Therefore, dandavats and so much time on the internet and all these things will be going on. And not the real thing that should be going on, like chanting Hare Krishna, etc. So, Prabhupada says if we are actually engaged in this devotional service, there will be no question of falling down. There will be no question of falling down. If we're actually sincerely and seriously engaged in devotional service. And he says, even if we do fall down, Krishna promises, Kantaya Pratijani, Name Bhakta Pranat, my devotee will never perish. Sometimes it says this devotional service will save us from the greatest fear of gliding down to the lower species of life. But Bharat Maharaj is on a very advanced platform. He got the body of a deer, isn't it? And Trichaketu saw Lord Sankarshan, and he got the body of Vitrasura, a demon. So how do we understand? You would not have to worry about falling to the lower species. Well, Bharat Maharaj, that's why we don't let people read Bhagavatam in the beginning, because they'll become thoroughly discouraged. Huh? But even though he had the body of a deer, even though he had the body of a demon, Trichaketu, they could remember Krishna. They could remember Krishna. So ultimately, those material dualities served as a served to augment their loving service to Krishna. Just like Queen Kunti prays, Vipada Santuta Shashrat, Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru, Bhavatam Darshanam Yat Sat Apunar Bhava Darshanam. She gave a whole list of calamities, and then she said, let these calamities come again and again and again. Luckily in Kali Yuga we don't have to pray like that, because they're coming again and again and again, because we're on the material platform. She said, let them come again and again and again. Why? Bhavatam Darshanam, because Bhavato Darshanam Yat Sat, because I can see you. I can remember you. When those dualities are hitting me, I remember you. And by remembering you, and I would venture to say remembrance with a certain level of intensity, that's what, usually how calamity works, then apunar bhava darshanam, I don't have to see birth and death. If I see you by my Krishna smarana, by my remembrance of you, remembrance of Krishna means also remembrance of Nam, that means apunar bhava darshanam, I don't have to see repeated birth and death. This is how the devotee takes the impact of duality. That which is unfavorable in an unliberated state becomes very nice in a liberated state. Just like I was hearing a Prabhupada lecture, he was describing how his disciples, even though they're struggling so much to spread the movement, that struggle is making them more enthusiastic. And he says the reporters are bewildered why this is so. Because they'll give a whole list of suffering things. And then we had one devotee like this in Atlanta. One reporter said, do you have a girlfriend? No. Do you have a car? No. Do you have a house? No. Do you have any money? No. He was saying no to everything. And so she asked him, how can you be happy without all these things? And he said, because I don't have all these things, I'm happy. There's a one devotee in Atlanta like this. But in another way of looking at the same thing, is that even if he has these things, they're taken away, he suffers some reversal. That reversal helps to augment his loving attachment to Krishna. Just like how does Krishna himself describes, Yasyaham anugrinami, Harishe tadanam shanai. To those persons who he favors, what does he do? Harishe. Harishe, man, he takes away. And how does he take it away? Tadanam shanai, step by step. So sometimes as devotees we have this experience that after joining the movement it seems that things started falling apart for us. Actually, they would have fallen apart in another way. But we think like that, oh, I was doing so good. I could have really made advancement in the material world and I gave everything to Krishna, though. Especially this happens when devotees get older and they're yet to become liberated. They have no realizations. So I gave the best years of my life to Krishna. And look at where it got me. It was a dangerous thing. I mean, I remember when I joined the temple. At that time, everyone who was here was not the most sincere. And when you see them, 20 years devoted, 25, you know, been in the movement for some time, and their face looked very, all the time, melancholy. And then, you know, as neophytes, we come like turbocharged, isn't it? Yeah, I'm going back to Godhead this life. We were super enthusiastic. And then the devotee looks at us and says, I remember when I used to think like that. And you get bewildered. What do you mean, used to think? Well, now I've become advanced. And now, when you become advanced, your face looks like this, always morose. That means we have not understood Krishna's mercy. That is why. We have to understand. We speak about relationship with Krishna, we should understand how Krishna works. How Krishna is working. Harishe. Oh, you have some attachment is there? Oh, yes, Krishna, I'm very much attached to this. Oh, very good. It's like he takes it away. And then you're screaming out. And then he lets you suffer like that for some time. Good, let him scream. It's like a parent taking care of a child. His child is attached to something that's like a knife. Something very dangerous for a child to be playing with. Or a grenade. A grenade is a better example. So he's playing with a grenade, having a lot of fun, you know? That's what material attachments are. They're grenades. Prabhupada says if we're attached to a galubjaman, Krishna is so kind that he will reward us another material body to fulfill that desire, to enjoy galubjaman. So that means the material attachment, there's nothing like a small attachment. Because if a galubjaman can get you another material body, there's nothing like small. So these attachments are like grenades. So the parent knows this is very dangerous for him. So what would the parent do? The parent will take away the grenade. And the kid will be screaming because he thinks this is a source of happiness. I'm playing with a grenade. And then the mother will snap and let him cry. Walk away. Let him cry for some time. That's okay. So in the same way, the relationship with Krishna means that. Well, those things where you are too much attached to, how do you shave Tadanamishanai? Step by step. I'm really attached to this. Now, okay, well, it's okay. I still have this. Well, at least I have this. Anything else? Krishna. Good. Only me. Only when we become a Kinshana is a necessity for the absolute truth realized. This is a statement of Bhaktisiddhanta is very enlightening. Only akinshana means without possessions. You know, only when, of course, anyway, it means without possessions. So only when we become akinshana are we able to, according to Queen Kunti, are we able to feelingly chant the holy names of Krishna, akinshana gotra, and do we actually realize the necessity of Krishna? Without becoming a Krishna, is not akinshana is not at all possible. So Krishna will help us to become akinshana. So this process of bhakti yoga is ecstatic. Because from beginning to end, Krishna is involved. Krishna and his devotees are involved. And that way we can reach the perfectional stage. So are there any questions? Anyone wants to ask anything, add anything to the discussion? Anything anyone wants to say? No? Okay. Yeah. I'm not attached to people asking questions. I like to get up so you don't feel obliged.
Several times devotees have actually said things to me like how you were saying, yeah, oh, no, the older devotees, they say, oh, you're new, that's why you have this feeling, and they're all so gray. And but they said one devotee explained this as new bhakta syndrome or something, where the senior devotees will say, oh yeah, you have the taste because you're new. Just wait until you're a little older. Krishna takes that away.
So, this is the purport of my statement. Of course, you know, there's some truth to the fact that when we're new bhaktas, the source of our enthusiasm is usually on the material platform. So, it's a fact. For many of us, the source of our enthusiasm will be based on a relative position. Things are going good. You know, I have food, shelter. Devotees are fun to be around, and going out doing service is so adventurous. So then, our enthusiasm is usually founded on some material understanding because we have misconceptions. So then, as misconceptions start to get removed, then the source of our enthusiasm has to be something else. Because the source of our enthusiasm, if it be the case with something on the material platform, that is certainly temporary. So if that will be our stronghold, then we will certainly be melancholy. Like sometimes you have an experience where you're having let's say, a really good day in sadhana, and the devotees are seeming so nice to you, God, for book distribution, all the jivas are seeming to favorably relate to you. So you think this is very nice. And you start to think that that is the essence of devotional service. And we forget about pleasing Krishna. So then when Krishna takes that away, if that be our basis, then we will be certainly melancholy. But if the source of our happiness be service to Krishna, that is a spiritual conception, and whatever Krishna desires, then we will always be blissful, even if that bliss implies our own suffering, as for apparently speaking. But if that be not the source of our inspiration, then certainly our smiles will turn upside down. So in the beginning, I mean, of course, I still don't feel devotees should just burst our bubbles like that as such, although at a certain stage of development they have to help us gain spiritual conceptions of what happiness is really all about. Happiness is about the pleasure of Krishna. The happiness that is described by Mahaprabhu is ashishava, padaratam panashtramam adarshanam marmohatam karotuva. You know this verse, Shishashakam. You know this verse? The last verse. Anyway, you'll learn it. Shishashakam. We're reciting every morning the Shishashakam. The last verse. So Krishna, even if you embrace me or you abandon me, in both situations, abandon me meaning I'm suffering. You've left me all high and dry. That is suffering. Or you embrace me in any condition, I know you only as my life heir, my life, Pranana. You're my only Lord. So that has to be the source of our happiness. So that way when you start having to render service in the future, when things get really difficult and rough, that happens sometimes also, you'll still be blissful. Because the source of your bliss was the pleasure of Guru, the pleasure of Krishna. When Srila Prabhupada came to America to fulfill the order of his Guru, how many of us would have liked to experience 2 heart attacks, you know, hardly much food to eat, no money, going to a foreign land with no money, no proper place to stay? You'll be enthusiastic to do like that? Suppose your bhakti leader says, now go to Afghanistan and preach by yourself. You'll not be it. You'll think that's, and then suppose they force you to do that somehow or other. You'll be blissful. You'll be like this. Turn evil. I'm going back to non-devotional life. Crying the whole way. If you even go, that is, if you, at least that would be good if you're crying the whole way. But if you would not go also. So that means, so the point is that, so some tough service will come. If we stick around in Krishna's service and we are acting responsibly and becoming more mature in our devotional service, then Krishna wants to see how much we are interested in his pleasure. So he will create many difficulties. That is the nature of Krishna. So we should not be illusioned like the Christians, thinking, oh, because I worship Jesus, I got a mansion, I got a nice car, I have a good wife, you know, everything. Or a materialistic devotee, thinking Krishna's been kind to me, because now look at my house. You can understand, Krishna's been kind to me. Now, when Krishna takes away the house, and you can say Krishna's been kind to me, that is the proof. So therefore, a devotee may not be trying to burst our bubble, but trying to help us to understand which is a spiritual conception of happiness. Although, that's not always the case. You understand? Okay, yeah.
Prabhu, regarding duplicity in dealing with devotees, so if we're, it sounded like you may have been encouraging that we should just be straightforward.
Yeah, of course.
But we also hear the principle of sometimes we understand what proper etiquette is, even though we don't feel like doing it, we should try to be externally very kind and gentle.
That is true. I asked the same question in Gita Nagari, and Maharaj gave a few examples of in cases where devotees didn't appear to be so straightforward. Like, one example was the case of Vidura, knowing that the Yadava race had already disappeared from the planet, but when he met the Pandavas, he didn't tell them straightforwardly that they've died. Because he knew bad news comes in its own way, so he didn't want to unnecessarily cause some anxiety. He gave a few other examples also. So sometimes it appears that a devotee may not be so straightforward, and understanding when to do so and when not to do so is a question of maturity. In our case, we should follow the etiquette, because a lot of the vibrations that go on in our mind are due to being not liberated, and therefore riding the waves of the modes of material nature. That's why our feelings are so substantial. And one day you'll be so thankful to a devotee, and the next day you'll be like hating him because of riding the waves in the modes of material nature. So in that case, it is not necessary to go in and say, I don't like you today. And then the next day, well, today you're okay. That would be foolishness. But if you notice that there is some type of vibration going on that's causing impediment, like you can't chant, it's like pervading everything that you do. You can't chant properly, you're thinking about it. You're eating prasadam, you're thinking about it, it's like making you mad. When you find it's like pervasive, then at that time it should be expressed. And also, the sooner, the better. Because the longer one waits to do so, then you build more and more evidence for your feeling to substantiate it. The funny thing about mental speculation is that you always find evidence for its reality, isn't it? The sciences, even though they're speculating like anything, they find so much data to prove what they're saying is true, isn't it? So when we wait too long to do certain things, when doubts are arising and we see that they're pervasive, and we wait too long to address them, then it'll become such a doubt that doubt will end up becoming a powerful demon that destroys your relationship, or it may even destroy your Krishna consciousness. So for every little thing that's coming up, it should not be. That is unnecessary. Rather follow Vaishnava etiquette. But if there's a pervasive problem, then it should be addressed because it's going to be an impediment in our ability to chant. Even mental aparas are count against us. Gadadhar Pandit only mentally thought wrongly about Pundarika Nidhi. He didn't actually say anything. He just thought offensively, oh, he's a Vishayi bogi like that. And therefore, he wanted to be saved from that offense. So if we're having some pervasive thing, it should be addressed. That's my understanding. Otherwise, the more straightforward we can be, that is a proof of an advancing society. Where you can just go up to someone and say straightforwardly, this, 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 and there's no harsh feelings. That would be the proof that of our gaining advancement in Krishna consciousness. No doubt. As a general note. Anyone else wants to say anything? Or Krishna?
Dr. Brendan found this passage in the Bhagavatam the other day that maybe you can share, Brendan. When Krishna favors a devotee, he gives him all these benedictions. And one of them was material opulence. Mm-hmm. And my understanding was that that's taken away. Maybe you can explain more.
Yeah, I just remember reading it was saying it's third canto, the end of third canto somewhere, and it's saying that when Krishna advanced of a mature devotee, as he matures, he gets...
So that's an important word.
Yeah, material opulence was one of the things, along with 10 others, austerity and knowledge, just many
others. So that means, as a general note, if you were investigate the Sudama Brahmana pastime in the 10th canto, when a devotee is fully mature, in other words, where he's so advanced that material opulence would not deviate him from his relationship with Krishna, then if so needed for his service, Krishna will give him the world, as he did with the Pandavas, etc. But they're so attached to Krishna, as is described in the first canto about Yudhishthira Maharaj when he gained the kingdom, he's so attached to Krishna that he saw all of those things as, you know, basically like phantasmagoria. But for those devotees who are attached, and it means insufficiently mature, and attached to opulence, then for that devotee, this other thing. For the mature devotee, for the immature devotee, take away. Huh? If you are mature, if you are immature. Because he wants, those who are mature are attached to him, those who are immature are not attached to Krishna so much. Sure. And money. Prabhupada would tell many times, how much we're making, $40,000 per week, how much we're making Pradyumna? He's speaking to a reporter. How much are we making Pradyumna? Yes, $40,000 a week. It's telling very happily, you know. Or the one story where Prabhupada was, they had a picture of a yogi not touching any money, and he was very, just meditating, not looking at the money. Prabhupada was telling him to take a picture of me embracing the money, like this. I would use it for Krishna service. But for devotees who are not mature, we better be like that yogi also. Understanding that that's bomb, dynamite. It will destroy. For most devotees, in an immature level, material opulence will be a cause of degradation. Prabhupada describes in the sixth canto, in the Leela with Indra offends his spiritual master, and Brihaspati. And that Prabhupada describes how it is the law of nature that if one gains material opulences, he will become degraded. That's the law of nature. That means if one has not transcended the influence of the modes of nature, then just like gravity is the law of nature, if you throw something up, it will come down. So in the same way, it is another law of nature that as one gains opulences, he must fall down. So one has to be very careful. We can always take shelter of Yukta Vairagya, and that way cause our path to hell, you know, in the name of Yukta Vairagya. The first element of Yukta Vairagya is Anansaktasya Vishayan, means you're not attached to the material sense objects. And Yataraha Upayunjata Nirbandha Krishna's, and you see the whole material world, universe, as Krishna's paraphernalia. Do you have that vision? I don't have the vision. You have a vision? Anyone here has a vision? You see the whole cosmos as Krishna's paraphernalia for his enjoyment. At that time, yuta vairagya uchite. And if you're not having that vision, then Prabhupada describes the nectar devotion that has to be applied under the instruction of a guru. Otherwise, you go to Best Buy and look at the whole store and say, yuta vairagya uchite. And then start, yuta vairagya. And another way, he said, Prabhupada, what are you doing? You're so immature. Yukta vairagya. Don't do palgu vairagya. Huh? You just want to reject the material world. Huh? I'm yukta vairagya uchite. can you deliver that sound system? You know, like that is, you, it is a dangerous thing. It is a dangerous thing. Material, and we have examples even in our movement as well of persons who did accumulate money without anyone's knowledge, and then it was a cause of their degradation. So that's a fact. It is a law of nature. So in general, it is seen that many devotees of the Lord, are not, especially nowadays, are not found to have much opulences, because that is a protection. And this question is discussed in the 80th chapter of the Krishna book. Why is it seen like that? Krishna is the God, husband of the goddess of fortune. All his devotees are broke. And Shiva, he lives under a tree, doesn't even wear clothes. And all his devotees got a whole bunch of money. What's going on? So there's a very beautiful discussion ensues there on that point. You can read it later. Prabhupada's Krishna book description is amazing in that section. And that's why we should never feel bereft. We should not feel poor if we're bereft of material opulences. We should rather thank our stars that Krishna's protecting us as such. If you are under the shelter of a spiritual master deeply, deep enough, and he has given a certain service that requires involvement with such things, and you have that full accountability, then it might not have its poisonous effects. But unless we've attained a very substantial level of devotional service, like prema, then these things have very poisonous effects. Okay, so Luke wanted to say something. Okay, Luke, and then you can go. Okay, you can go. That is chapter 88. Yes. It's a great chapter. You want to say something? That's pretty cool.
So, I was just wondering about this point of austerity. It seems, you know, we do have trouble just executing the basic practices of bhakti yoga, but given that material opulence is degrading, some austerity may be required. What is the, how much austerity is really required, like beyond just trying to be sincere and regulated with our devotional practices?
Austerity in relationship to material opulence? Yes.
And also like sense indulgence and these kinds of things.
Anyway, the greatest austerity in Kali Yuga for conditioned souls is to accept an authority. That is the most profound austerity of the Kali Yuga. So if we accept some authority, then that is our greatest good fortune. It is very difficult to accept authority because oftentimes authority means someone can be called as authority to the degree they are actually connected to Krishna. That's a fact. It is not that anyone is an authority just because they have a position of authority. Although that position may be honored. Just as the Nawab Hussain Shah, when he busted Sanatana Goswami, you know, having Bhagavatam with 30 brahmanas. And he was like, I thought you were sick. Yeah, I'm not sick. I'm not coming to work. So then when the Nawab Hussain Shah walked into the room, they all stood up to honor him. But they weren't honoring him per se because he was a rascal. But they were honoring the fact that he was representing a position, a quality of Krishna, as Prabhupada describes in the purport. So they were honoring that quality of Krishna which he was embodying at that moment. But they weren't really honoring him, per se. So, in the same way, we show respect for any person in any position of authority. Otherwise, we will cause our own degradation by not doing so, by getting absorbed in dualities. That's how we cause our degradation. But at the same time, someone is actually an authority to the degree they're really connected to Krishna. Otherwise, how are they authority without that connection? And therefore, what we have trouble with in the Kali Yuga is that we are not able to perceive who is connected to Krishna. So we try to measure devotees. How much they're connected to Krishna. I think he's a little bit more connected, so maybe I'll put my faith over here. No, he's definitely not connected over there. I know he's not connected. And because of this tendency to measure devotees, we, of course, we commit aparadum, because to measure devotees is an aparad. That's what I was reading this morning in the Sridhar. I was hearing about Sridhar, Kulavitcha Sridhar this morning when I was reading. This was the whole discussion, that section. You try to depend on your empiric cold mind and senses to measure devotees, and you commit aparad, and the worst effect of doing so is you can't place your faith in anyone. But you're thinking, I don't see, where is there? I don't see any sadhus here. Nice devotees, neophytes, but nice devotees, but I don't see there's anyone I could place my faith in. So in Kali Yuga, it is a very challenging situation. On the one hand, there are many persons who are not also connected to Krishna. On the other hand, we are also not connected to Krishna, and therefore we don't have perception. So a very challenging situation. Can you understand the difficulty? It's a very difficult situation. Therefore, no one can ever really find their guru. It is not like something, okay, let me look for gurus today. Okay, I don't like that one. This one is, I think it's a little bit too, no. You cannot find your guru. Ultimately, guru is the mercy of God. It says you should search for guru, right? You have to search for guru. But what does it mean to search for guru? I'm using the word guru, or it means authority. It means one has to, first of all, do the inner search. It means removing his insincerities from the heart. That inner search has to go on. And then when Krishna sees the genuineness for a bona fide guru, because he's super soul, he knows what's going on in everyone's heart, then guru manifests. He's the external manifestation of super soul, so super soul manifests as bona fide guru, bona fide authority. So in the interim, say, if you want to talk about being austere, then it is austere to accept an authority who may not be in a proper connection with Krishna. But you must do that for your own spiritual elevation. Because if you try to challenge thinking, oh, he is not properly connected, then we cause our own degradation by absorption in the modes of material nature. That is austere. And then another austerity is self-examination. You know, what's my point? What am I really looking for? Another austerity is when you come in contact with someone you think is genuine, to follow that. That is very austere. So we want to practice austerity in Kali Yuga. This is the main point of austerity. And it comes in accepting authority. It's not at all easy. Many times we think we are very submissive to authority. But as soon as authority gets a little bit heavy with us, then we understand, I got issues with authority. Kali Yuga means got issues with authorities. That's what it means. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.